Welcome to Community Forum, a weekly call-in program produced at the studios of KSKA. Opinions expressed are those of the guest, host, and callers, and do not represent the views of KSKA, the licensee, or the underwriters. And now, the host of Community Forum, Nellie Moore.
Good afternoon. Welcome to KSKA and Community Forum. Today we're talking about the initiative on the ballot, an act establishing a program of public funding for campaigns for state elected officials to be known as the Alaska Clean Elections Act. We have three guests in the studio today, and we're definitely going to be hoping our audience will join in and help us out on getting a lot of information out about it. Our local number is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Our toll-free is 1-888-353-5752. And you can also email me, but please make it brief. It's hard to sit here and read a page and a half question. Keep it brief at communityforum@kska.org. My guest in the studio today, Tim June, thanks for joining us. He is one of the initiative sponsors, the initiative sponsor and a member of Alaskans for Clean Elections.
Yeah, thank you, Nellie. It's a pleasure to be here today.
And I guess you live in Haines.
I do. And Haines has been my home for 32 years.
Yeah, I was just telling Tim that I've never been there, but I've heard it's a beautiful place. Also here in the studio speaking against the initiative is Ken Jacobus. And many of you know him as a constitutional attorney here in Anchorage for many years. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Yes, I'm opposed to. Nobody's opposed to clean elections, but I'm opposed to taxpayer-funded, government-funded elections.
And we will get to that. And last in the studio, accompanying Ken today is July Leslie. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay, Tim. Let's. I took a look at the initiative. It's on the internet. It's 24 pages long. Let's give everybody kind of a brief overview, and then we'll get to it.
Sure. First of all, I'm the chair of Alaskans for Clean Elections. We're a coalition of Alaskans across the political spectrum that are working to get the big money out of politics in Alaska with Ballot Measure 3. What this does, it's addressing public funding of campaigns. It's commonly known as the Clean Election Initiative, and it's a proven voluntary system that's already working in seven states, and it makes elections about voters and ideas instead of lobbyists and big money. So clean elections essentially decreases special interest influence, it levels the playing field, it restores faith in Alaska's government, it increases accountability of elected leaders, it restores open and robust debate on issues, it attracts more diverse candidates, it increases voter participation. It slows the escalating costs of elections, increases competition for seats, and also increases voter turnout. So I know some critics have questioned the system, but it is working well and enjoys over 80% public support in some of the states that currently have it. And few things in our democracy rise to that level of support. It's supported by the candidates that use it. It's supported by the legislators who are elected by it and by the voters who elect those legislators. So I'm excited. This is a great opportunity for Alaska. On August 26th, it's going to be our one and only chance to really bring the power back to the people of Alaska and tell our elected leaders what we want to do in terms of solving corruption in this state.
And I did want to say just quickly also, for those of you who may have heard the promo, Arlis Sturgulewski is not able to make it on the program today. She was going to be speaking in favor of it. Ken Jacobus, you wrote the little comment about the initiative that's in the voter pamphlet.
Yes, I wrote it along with Dick Randolph. We're both signers
yes.
to it.
So let's kind of explain your point of view and go from there.
Okay, my point of view is basically this, that the idea of clean elections is seductive. Nobody's against clean elections. In fact, I'm not against clean elections. I'd like to see every election clean. However, but what this is simply taxpayer-funded elections where the candidates get money from the state in order to run for public office. The experiences showed, I believe, that it does not reduce corruption. Corruption is still present in the system at the if there is corruption in the system, it's present where Vico bribes people. It's present where the special influences write legislation for people to introduce. None of this is dealt with. It will not reduce the influence of special interest groups. It will not make the legislators more accountable to the voters. I don't believe it will produce a single positive change in Alaska politics or elections. It will simply make the process a lot more difficult because of another layer of complicated governmental regulation by giving millions of government dollars to individual politicians. The state estimates the cost of this at, I believe, $12 million per election. It's in the election pamphlet. We debated this morning, and I was cited to a study of the Maine elections. And the Maine election study is very interesting, but the one point that I can pick out of it here is the 2006 survey, Maine candidates were asked, if you were elected, do you think the Maine Clean Election Act will change the way you do your job as a legislator? Only 25% of them said yes. 75% of them said no. They would act exactly the same regardless of how their financing came. And I think that's accurate because most legislators are honest. And they will act in accord with the way they're supposed to act as legislators. We've also cited a couple of studies which show, I found a couple of studies, one by the University of Missouri and one done in Arizona, which show that public funding laws have a statistically significant negative effect on public views of whether people have a say in the government or whether officials care. The only thing that increases public confidence in government is disclosure laws. If people contribute money, they should disclose it right away so that the people will know who the candidate's supporters are. Under public funding, the money comes from the public, so you have no indication as where the supporters lie. Anyway, I think that what it is, it's a waste of government money. The government should not be funding people to run the government. And there's no benefit to it for us.
And I couldn't find one, but to your knowledge, is there a particular group? I know I looked on several websites, and I didn't find any that specifically said, you know, that they were mounting any kind of support against the initiative. Are you aware of any?
No, I'm not aware of anything. It's just a matter of common sense. We don't have an organized group to oppose this initiative. I was sort of drafted into this as a last minute. In July, too, because of our political beliefs as to the fact that government should not be supporting politicians
okay,
to run for the government.
Well, let's hear from July now, and then we'll give Tim an opportunity to respond.
Yeah, Nellie, like you said when you introduced me, I'm with Ken, so I'm in agreement with everything that he said. I think the bottom line for myself and for most taxpayers is that I want to spend my money in politics as I see fit. I certainly don't want to have a blanket tax out there supporting any politician who gets a certain amount of signatures and dollar contributions in my district. And the overall benefit, potential benefit of this act just really does not add up to millions and millions and millions of taxpayer dollars.
Okay, Tim, we've heard a number of critical comments. Let's talk about number one, the amount of money it's going to cost to start this kind of system.
Yeah, I think we need to put it in perspective that what this comes out to is about $9 a person, or I should say $9 a voter in Alaska. And that's based on this last year we had a $14.6 billion budget, which means that we each are going to receive about $22,500 in some benefit from the state in theory. Of that $22,500, clean elections will cost $9 of that. So it's an insignificant amount of money. Money should not be the factor. It's not what it costs, it's what it does. And what it does is it takes away the power of special influence, as we have seen through Vico Corporation most recently. Number of indicted legislators, number of convicted legislators, many more to go. And essentially, this is going to pay for itself 100 times over. Because if we look at just, say, one vote, let's take the 2006 PPT tax. And I should say, if people will look in the recent Senator Cowdery indictment papers submitted by the FBI, they talk about a secret recorded conversation between VICO CEO Bill Allen and VP Rick Smith. And in that, Rick Smith says to Bill Allen, "The only leverage we have over legislators is either through campaign contributions or through holding fundraisers." So we can see over the years they put close to $1 million into Alaska political campaigns. They've had a very significant influence. And in that 2006 PPT tax vote, they likely cost us, it was a close vote, they likely cost us at least $1 billion for that one vote in 1 year. That $1 billion would pay for every clean election political campaign for every office in the state for the next 200 years. So that's just one small example of how critical the decisions are that our legislators are making and how effective it's been for special interest to buy their way in, buy their way into the halls of the legislature through campaign contributions. I agree with Ken, this isn't the be-all and end-all of everything, but it's the fresh start, and it's a start that six of the seven other states have used to correct major corruption problems. And this is our opportunity to do it.
Okay, before we go back to Ken and July, I wanted to talk a little bit about the mechanics, Tim. We're talking about a commission, an administrator, and the Clean Elections Fund. Tell me a little bit about that and how it would work.
Yes, essentially, we wrote this as a group with many former legislators involved, people that had seen the game from the inside for years. They knew what was up. And so they wrote this with the intent of correcting the problems that's in our current system. And so essentially what it is, a short summary, is a clean election candidate, first of all, has to take a pledge right at the beginning that they're not going to take any outside any private contributions whatsoever. So it's a completely voluntary system. They don't have to participate in the program. But if they choose to, they take a pledge. They go out into their district, and if they're running for a House seat, they have to collect 200 signatures and $5 from each supporter in their district of that 200. Those $5 contributions go into a state fund. And every candidate that's running with clean elections, their contributions goes into the state fund. The state adds some general fund money, and then that money is returned to them if they have taken their pledge and shown their broad base of public support. They get a set amount of money, and they have to spend that exactly for campaign purposes only, and they can spend no more. They can't even add their own money to it. So what it is, it's a way of leveling the playing field. 90-some percent of the time, in California, is 98% of the time. Alaska, it's about 90 to 92% of the time. The most money is what determines the winner in a campaign. Mm-hmm. So this gets around this. It gives everybody equal money, and they go out and run on their own and run on the issues.
Okay, so a person who opts out of it, where do they get their campaign contributions?
They continue just as we have. They go out and find private contributors, maximum limit of $500. They exercise the same option. And it enables that. That's the great thing about this. It doesn't at all impede anybody's right to free speech. If they feel they can raise more money through private contributions and they don't feel like that's going to be an impediment to them once elected, they're certainly free to do this. But candidates can opt to take clean elections, and once they are elected, they have no obligation to any private contributors or any special interest, and they can actually make decisions based on the merit of an issue and be responsible to the voters in their district.
So in other words, a person who wanted to do this would take a pledge and follow the rules as they're laid out, or they would just continue to do as we are now, collecting contributions, and Alaska Public Offices Commission monitors it, and the regulatory agency would continue to receive their reports, their 30, 60, whatever, 90-day reports they're doing now, and that would still be
yes,
there.
Yes,
the current monetary limit.
Yeah, we wrote it within our existing system. We were very specific. We want this to be as inexpensive as possible. But to get this change, it's going to cost a little bit of money, but the rewards are going to be well worth it. And I should say, in the states that have this in place, Maine now is up to 83% of their candidates use clean elections. Arizona is, I believe, 57% of their candidates use clean elections. So it's wildly popular with candidates, with voters, with legislators once they're elected. So if we get a foothold in this state, this is really going to really going to help Alaska in a big way for the next 50 or 100 years.
Okay, Ken, it seems to me like, at least if I understand it correctly, that this is sort of an add-on. People aren't required to do it. Why is it just the cost involved that you are objecting to, or what is it?
No, it's the cost is my mic on?
Yes.
Okay. It's the cost involved plus the effect that it has on our political system. I do not believe that it's going to have any advantage to our political system. As shown in Arizona, people have become less enchanted with the political system, not more enchanted. And I think that it's easy to see why legislators love the system. It gives them free money. Why people who are elected under the system love the system. The government pays for it. It gives them more free money. We're giving a lot of free money to people in Alaska for benefits like energy, permanent fund dividend. We shouldn't give free money to politicians to get elected. Let me just use one example here. We've been talking about generalities. Let's look at the governor's campaign as an example. A participating candidate must collect 3,000 campaign contributions of exactly $5 each, no more, no less, for a total of $15,000. Now, these $5 contributions can be collected by the candidate individually or by professional fundraising organizations, like they pay people to sign petitions. And I think that for the gubernatorial candidate, that's a lot of signatures. They'll have to have other people collect for them. Now, for 200 in a district, maybe differently. Now, the contributions are then turned over to the state. In return for this $15,000 of other people's money, the government pays the gubernatorial candidate as a minimum, a statutory minimum. They may use less if they spend less, but up to $250,000 for primary election. Up to $500,000 for the joint governor-lieutenant governor campaign in the general election. I think this is a great return on funds, $750,000 of government money in return for $15,000 of other people's money. Now, it gets worse. If somebody decides that they're philosophically opposed to taking government money, then they decide they're going to spend their own money on the – raise their own man, spend their own money elections. And you add to this – people who decide that they want to support a candidate but not in conjunction with the campaign. They want to make independent expenditures. So suppose you have those two factors in there, those acting against a publicly funded candidate. Then the candidate gets more public money in order to respond to these situations with a non-public candidate. The limitation on that is that for the primary election, the lieutenant the governor candidate can get up to $825,000 to respond to other people's opinions or other people's candidacies, and up to $1,650,000 for the joint general election campaign. We don't believe, given the experience of this, that this is a wise expenditure of government funds, especially where we've got oil prices going down. We've overexpended already.
On the document that you and Dick Randolph authored that's in the elections pamphlet, people will get that in the mail. It's also available on the Internet under Alaska Division of Elections. It says, this measure is nothing more than an incumbent protection act. Is that because – why is that?
That's because if a person desires to take public funding, a person's expenses are limited. So that the person who takes public funding can only spend a certain amount of money, a very limited amount of money, which would be, let's see, for the House, for example, primary expenditures for a representative would be limited to $17,600. An incumbent has name recognition. A person who's running against an incumbent does not have name recognition and has to get their message out. You know, why should you vote for me as opposed to somebody whose name you know? $17,600 just, I don't think, really cuts it. It prevents a person and a person's supporters from getting their message out.
Is it a bad thing to reelect incumbents? I mean,
oh, it might be or it might not be. I wouldn't want to reelect John Cowdery, for example.
Or just voting based on name recognition isn't necessarily going to be, isn't necessarily going to meet the goals that the taxpayers and voters want in their district.
Tim June from Alaskans for Clean Elections. Can you respond to some of what Ken has been talking about?
Yes. Yeah, I'd like to. First of all, on the one hand, Mr. Jacobus is complaining that it's costing too much money. But on the other hand, he's implying that there's not going to be enough money for candidates to be competitive. You can't have it both ways. What we did is we split this down the middle. And we are allowing candidates who earn the right to public funding through going out and doing the work of finding those people in the district to sign on their petition to give them $5. We allow them enough money to run for the campaign. And I should clarify that our amount is limited to three times the base amount. So, in other words, we'll match dollar for dollar a privately funded candidate, but only up to a certain amount. We're trying to be fiscally responsible. We don't want this to cost the state much money. So, therefore, we set a limit on that. And I think the important thing to see here is that this is going to allow, as Mr. Jacobus points out, it's difficult to defeat an incumbent. However, all evidence to the contrary, if you look at races in Alaska, typically incumbents have either 13 times more money or 5 times more money or 3 times more money. That's the statistics in terms of how outspent challengers are with incumbents. So there's no way that a challenger can beat an incumbent if they have 1/13 of the money. What Clean Elections does is it gives each candidate equal funding. Doesn't mean they're necessarily going to win, but they're going to have a heck of a competitive race and a chance and opportunity to actually debate the issues with the candidate, be there, get their literature out, get their message out, and compete on an equal footing. So that's the beauty of Clean Elections.
And I should probably also say that while Mr. Cowdery was indicted, he has pleaded not guilty, so I guess we'll have to see how that plays out.
Sure.
May
I just say one more thing?
Sure. Mr. Jacobus.
We're talking about money here, and we're talking about how much it's going to cost. You know, I'm saying that the candidates can get the representatives can get $16,000 with the add-ons, and if you take all of the 40 Republican race or representative races into account for a single election, you're talking about a potential expenditure of over $2 million of government money in order to publicly fund all these elections if you have opponents who are non-publicly funded. So it will be less than that as a practical matter, but you're looking at a huge chunk of money. And the state in the official election pamphlet says, as its initial number is $12
million. Tim, did you want to?
Yeah, and we're not debating that cost. That was a figure that the state came up with. It's a similar figure that we came up with. But I should say, comparing it to what's actually spent on campaigns now, in 2006, private contributions to candidates in Alaska came to some $17 million. So with our program, this is proposing to bring it down to $12 million, which is a significant decrease. But the main thing it does is it changes where those contributions come from. You know, what sort of influence will a contributor that gives $5 really have on the candidate? Nothing. But somebody that's given them $500, or in Vico's case, a single employer whose employees give $500, $500, $500, you know, that adds up to a significant amount of money. And as we can see on those votes that happened over the oil tax, they got what they paid for. You know, they got some significant savings in taxes on oil, which cost all of us Alaskans tremendously. So this is a system that makes it fair, that takes that special interest corruption money out of it. And, you know, I should say, you know, we have to remember that as long as candidates have to raise huge sums of money to get elected, corruption will continue. You know, politicians inevitably are going to serve those who finance their campaigns. The solution is simple. If Alaskans fund elections, then the people that we elect will serve the people of Alaska. If we don't, then special interests will continue to dominate our system.
July, did you want to add anything before I ask the next question?
Yeah, Nellie, you know, it's something that in talking to my peers and coworkers about tax-funded, ballot measure 3 tax-funded elections, that I think really rubs people the wrong way is if you imagine, you know, in your district, your Senate and House people running for that office, imagine that you just really don't agree with some of the people running, but yet you're personally paying for their campaigns. I think that just doesn't make – it just is not common sense. Not only is it a waste of money, but it just is not common sense that everyone, each taxpayer, should have to contribute to political campaigns that they don't endorse or believe in.
I wanted to, part of the paper that was written against the Clean Elections Initiative. It says, the fact is, experts have consistently found that campaign contributions do not affect legislative votes. And I wanted to talk about that a little bit. And it sort of brings to my mind when I go to either, you know, the Democratic Party or Republican Party websites or any nonprofit organization, stature is always given to the people who give more. I think on the Republican Party website, they're called heavy hitters. On others, they might be called the silver member or the gold member or the platinum members. Ken, how is it that at the campaign level that making those large donations do not impact someone's stature with the candidate and perhaps later as it doesn't get them a quicker foot in the door if they're elected?
I'll say this, that if you're a large contributor to either of the political parties, your name will become recognized and they'll hit you up again. Everybody will hit you up for contributions. And it gets you access. You're able to talk to the candidate, and maybe more quickly than somebody who's contributed less money. But it doesn't buy you the vote. And that's our legislators aren't all that corrupt, or at least most of them are. They don't sell their votes for money, even large campaign contributions. They know that they're there for a particular job, and most of them honestly try to fulfill it. As I pointed out before, 75% of the legislators in the Maine study said that private financing or public financing wouldn't change the way they voted. 75%.
Okay, I wanted to get to Tim real quick before we get to the phones.
Yeah, and I think I would like to comment on that. I think Mr. Jacobus just disproved his own theory because, first of all, no candidate or legislator is going to admit that he's influenced by anything, especially money. So it's self-serving for them to say that they're not influenced. But nevertheless, at least 25% of those legislators say, yes, I am influenced by large campaign contributions. And when we're dealing with a state that has very close votes, back to the PPT tax, that was a split vote in the House many times, 2020, 1921. So let's say 25% of the legislators are impacted. That swings that vote one way or another, depending on what that special influence wants to do. So that's significant to me. 25% is nothing to be dismissed.
PPT is special, but I think what the Fed's being up
there. We're talking about the petroleum tax.
I know. Yeah. We're talking about the petroleum tax.
Our listeners know. Yeah.
The fact that the Feds have come up to Alaska and have cracked down on the number of legislators, I think, is going to scare anyone away from being corrupt for the next two or three decades. We don't need this additional expenditure of public money to fund the elections in order to scare people away from being corrupt.
Tim?
Yeah, and my comeback to that is, first of all, it is embarrassing as an Alaskan that we're dependent on the FBI and the Justice Department to come into our state and to expose the massive corruption that we've had here. We have plenty of agencies that are set up to do this. We have the Legislative Ethics Committee. This has been going on for the last 25 years, and nobody has stepped up to the plate to do it. And so with Clean Elections, this is Alaskans taking charge of our own destiny and saying enough is enough. We're going to bring a system in. We don't need the FBI. We don't need the Justice Department. We need to police and take care of our own.
Okay, you are listening to Community Forum on KSKA today. We're talking about measure number 3 on the August ballot, the primary election. It's an act establishing a program of public funding for campaigns for state elected offices to be known as the Alaska Clean Elections Act. And if you'd like to join in the discussion today in the studio, helping us out, Tim June, the chair and one of the initiators of the Clean Elections Initiative, and from Alaskans for Clean Elections, I'll get here pretty quick, and then speaking out on the con position, Ken Jacobus, a constitutional attorney here in Anchorage, and July Leslie is here also speaking out against the measure. I want to go now to the phones and see if we can get some more input and questions on this to Carolyn on line 3. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you very much. As I said to the screener, I am a volunteer on this effort, and I had a couple of thoughts that I wanted to put forward. One of the things which I had wanted to mention is if anyone wants another affirmation of why this is necessary, They might go to www.grannyd.com. That's a 94-year-old woman that's been working for a number of years to get money out of our politics. She says we're not going to have a democracy if we don't do something about it. And when I heard of this effort, I wanted to be a part of it. And I remember Mr. Randolph from when he first ran for office up there in Fairbanks. I was an employee at, well, actually, I was a student. But I worked at KUAC, and I powdered his nose on the first election he ran for. So I've watched this Republican / independent push for things like getting rid of the state income tax. I think Dick thought it was going to get him into the governor's chair, which it did not. But clean elections is, you know, I've been up here over 40 years, and I've seen the corruptions on both sides of the aisle, and this is really an opportunity for us to take back the state. And I think that if we don't do it, we're missing a huge opportunity. And I'd like the specific thing for Ken, not Mr. Jacobus, the other gentleman to speak to is the number of people that have come in, the diverse population of candidates, the numbers of incumbent, unchallenged incumbents that have dropped in these states where it has worked, because it is working. And I think, you know, we talk about the government money. That's our money.
Okay,
and for
Tim.
Us to have to constantly be watching these people because they're on the take is not the way we should go about it.
Okay, thanks, Carolyn. Tim, do you want to respond to Carolyn? And then we'll give Ken a chance, and then we've got to get back to the phones.
Yeah, thanks, Carolyn. Thanks for your volunteer efforts. This whole effort has been really run by volunteers across the state, and we're so grateful. We're a very lean grassroots group, and we wouldn't be anywhere without volunteers all over the state. And what you're saying led me to think of a quote by Governor Schwarzenegger from California: "Money comes in, favors go out, the people lose." That's really a synopsis of the system that we have of present day. And I think that what you're talking about in terms of uncontested races, we have many times 25%, 30%, sometimes 40% in the primary of races that go uncontested. And in a democracy, that's a shame. You know, people need to be held accountable for their votes. They need to explain to the voters, you know, what they just did. And so we need to encourage people to get out and run. And clean elections is very effective at making those uncontested races filled with candidates. In Arizona now, I believe they have less than 2% of their races are uncontested. They used to have 30% uncontested. So it's had a tremendously positive change. And, you know, we look forward to getting more diverse people in, people that don't normally have access to moneyed interest. You know, they don't know the big buck spenders, getting more minorities involved in the state. When we wrote this initiative, we really tried to craft it for the most difficult district in the whole United States, which is Woody Salmon's District 6, which is the Yukon-Kuskokwim. He has over 100 villages spread out over, 800 or 1,000 miles. And so we tried to see how would a legislator from there successfully run on clean elections. And we came up with, I think, a good system. And we understand across the state the cost of elections varies depending on the district. Over in Bethel, Mary Nelson's House district, Mary spends about $12,000 for her campaign. She'll probably continue to spend that $12,000 for clean elections. That seems to cover that. But you look at some of the more difficult races in the urban Anchorage area where candidates spend $120,000, $125,000. We had to write a system that would accommodate that need so they can go out and they can have equal television advertising and whatever the needs are in the urban district. So I think we hit the mark. And one of the things we also did was I'm from rural Alaska. I'm in the villages all the time, and I understand that even $5 is a significant amount of money to Alaska Natives. Mm-hmm. And so we put a clause in here that the regulatory agency would write a basically write a set of rules that would allow anybody to check a box that say, I make under the federal poverty guideline, please waive my $5. However, I'm signing my name and supporting this candidate. So we're making it very accessible for people in the villages, and that's certainly been a major goal of ours.
I wanted to go to July quickly, and then we'll get to the phones to Terry on line one. Go ahead, July.
Yeah, Nellie. I, too, by the way, grew up in rural Alaska. I've been here a little over 30 years from Kodiak. You know, talking about the high-powered special interest groups and how this is going to somehow perhaps make them disappear, I just don't really think that's the case. In fact, I think that it can actually increase their aid to candidates under a taxpayer-funded campaign because I don't imagine the governor, for example, is going to be out getting all these signatures and $5 donations. I think that the high-powered special interest groups that you're talking about are just going to have – they're going to find other ways to assist the candidates where there is no disclosure. As Ken mentioned, disclosure of funds is one of the best ways, I think, to prevent corruption and to be aware of potential corruption. So how do you think, Mr. June, those interest groups are going to be getting involved? What new ways? Have you thought about that? What new ways they're going to be affecting candidates where there is no disclosure?
Go ahead, Tim.
Yes, actually we have. And I should say how it's worked in most states with House and Senate district candidates, they go out into the district and collect their own $5 contributions. Now, understandably, for a governor, the responsibility of gathering 3,000 signatures, they're going to need help. In order to do that, nobody can collect contributions for them unless they're a signified deputy treasurer of that campaign. So it's not like they can pull people off the streets and say, you're going to raise, you know, money for me. They have to be part of that effort. They have to be, their name has to be spelled out who they are. They're a deputy treasurer. It's transparent of who's collecting donations and for what purpose. So, you know, we've let that be. And I agree with you. Special interest money is always going to be here. We're just trying to lessen the impact of it on our legislators and the decisions they make.
Okay, we're going to go to the phones now and try to get caught up on those for a while. Terry on line one, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Yeah, Tim already repeated the main point I was going to make, which is that survey that Ken first mentioned. I actually think that's more evidence for Tim than Ken. I'm shocked that 25% would admit that. Given the wording of the question, again, I think the way it's worded, most people would lean towards saying, oh, sure, it wouldn't, the private funding wouldn't affect me. And I'm shocked that 25% would even admit that. I imagine it's probably actually a higher percent. So even if it's a lower percentage, it would be worth doing. I don't think that these vested interests would be making big donations if it didn't have a significant impact on policy. I mean, why would they bother? And it becomes an expense for them that just trickles down to the consumer with whatever corporation they're in. But I think most importantly, the folks arguing against this are saying that they don't think that people who don't support a candidate should have to contribute. I don't see it so much as contributing to the candidate as contributing to the political process, in which this is public information we're talking about as far as what each candidate thinks. And I don't see any problem with public money going to public information. That's essentially what we do by funding libraries. So I think I would be happy to put the same amount of money out there for a Republican as a Democrat, as a Green and a Libertarian, if I can actually know that I'm getting about, you know, they have the same amount of resources to advertise, because advertising works. And the more bucks you have to put some kind of ad on the TV, regardless of what your actual ideas are, you know, research shows marketing works. You're more likely to win.
Okay, hold your guns, gentlemen. We're going to move on, and lady to Dorothy on line 8. Welcome to the show.
Hi there.
Thanks for waiting.
I have so many things to say.
Okay, quickly, please.
First of all, we're all talking like this is our money. None of us contributes to the state treasury except through our oil dollars. And so talking about that it costs me money to fund this is ridiculous. Second, Ken said that legislators say that it doesn't, that big contributors don't influence the vote. Well, but that they do get better access. If it may not buy their vote, but if the people who have access are the ones that the candidate listens to, obviously that's the way that the legislator can be swayed. And if the access is everything. And the last one was the woman who says that she thinks she should have to pay for a candidate or something that she doesn't agree with, fine. Then go vote, talk to others, vote your convictions, volunteer to defeat it or the candidate. There are all sorts of ways to do that without getting involved with funding. And playing with a level playing field can only bring cleanness to our state government, which is desperately needed.
Okay, thanks for your call. I wanted to go first to Ken. What about that level playing field? Is our current system unlevel?
Everybody has the right. It's unlevel in the sense that people are not equal. I mean, some people have, like for instance, July is in the real estate business. She's a good salesman. She could probably be a good politician. I'm not a salesman. I couldn't sell real estate. So people have different abilities. People have different fundraising abilities. But you don't, just because someone has, you don't use the government to level the playing field as far as money. And if a person has a good message to sell and the person goes out and sells that message, the people will contribute, will vote. But the government shouldn't try to, quote, level it. I mean, it's just like in order to level the playing field in the Olympics, do you attach extra weights to the best swimmers? I mean, no, you don't.
I don't think that's really a good comparison,
okay.
Really. I'm having a hard time imagining that. But, Tim, did you want to respond to what Ken had to say?
Yeah, well, first of all, to Dorothy, the caller, I would like to thank you for your comments. And you're right, you know, we don't have taxpayers here in Alaska. This is virtually oil tax money. I should say our first initiative, we originally proposed paying for this completely with a 3 cent a barrel tax on oil, which was at the time, I think, at $140-some a barrel, $130 a barrel. So that shows how insignificant it is. We are in court right now challenging the lieutenant governor's rejection of that. We hope that that will come back in. But, you know, Alaskans can help us. We can pay for this a number of different ways. We chose the one that was available to us because of the lieutenant governor blocking us. But I think that, you know, this money belongs to all Alaskans as the resource does. And, you know, I agree with her. Access is everything to legislators. That really, that is the bottom line. If it costs you $500 to get in the door, that's worth it to a lot of special interest, and they pay it over and over again.
Okay, July, did you want to add something to that?
Yeah, I understand. It's not $9 directly coming out of my pocket, but at $12 million per election, that's a lot of money that our state could be doing other things with, and I just don't see the benefit.
Okay, back to the phones. Line 2, Gershon, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me. I have a couple of quick points. First of all, the last comment by Mr. Jacobus about it being selling a message, I just couldn't believe that. I mean, it's so totally off the point. This is about people buying access to legislators and potential legislators, not the other way around, not about these people trying to make their points to the public so that they can get votes. Second, I'd like to say that this isn't just about oil. You know, we tend to focus on that, but there are a lot of different entities out there that are doing it, doing the same thing. I've been tracking the cruise industry here for a number of years in the state, and they give tremendous sums of money to legislators to get them elected. That money's coming from Miami, and what we found when we tracked these donations was that we'd have an employee of the cruise industry who lived in Miami or Washington, D.C. or somewhere giving money, his wife would give money, his kids would give money, and so the idea that it was even a $500 limit per person was kind of ridiculous. They certainly get around that easily enough. And then finally, I won't take up too much of the time because I know many of my points have already been said. If this money was not going to buy access and buy influence, they wouldn't give the money, and that's just simple. I mean, I don't know how anybody can even argue against that. If anybody wants to see, you want to get a laugh out of this whole issue, if you could consider the issue funny, you should go on YouTube and see the YouTube video by a legislator where these guys put together a video that if each Alaskan put in $15, we could match the money the special interests give to buy the legislature every session, and then we could have the legislature working for us. What a novel concept.
Okay.
Well, that's exactly what clean elections is really going to do, and I'm all for it. I hope people vote for it.
Okay, thanks for your call. Ken, did you want to respond to some of his points?
Yeah, just really quickly. The point about the people who are making contributions from the cruise ship industry, Those contributions are reported. Those contributions are a matter of public record so that the public can look at it and the opponents look at it and the newspapers look at it, the radio stations look at it, and they say so-and-so has gotten so much money from the cruise ship industry, from the oil industry. You know what you're voting for at the time that you're voting. Where you've got publicly funded elections, it's just really a blank slate, at least initially, because all the money is public. You don't know the sources of it. And even now, there's a lot of things that are going on that we don't know the sources of, like the money which is funding Proposition 4. We don't know where it's coming from.
You're referring to the mining.
I'm referring to the anti-mining initiative, right, or so-called, it's called the Clean Water Initiative, like kind of like this is called Clean Elections. But that's the thing that's important in order to restore people's confidence in government is the disclosure. People have to know where this money's coming
from.
Is
that the case? They wouldn't know where the money's coming from?
Under the present system, well, let me address first for Gershon. It is true. I shouldn't single out the oil industry. Special interests come in many forms. In 2006, the oil industry donated some $2 million to campaigns. The cruise ship industry donated $1.4 million. So they're a significant player in this state. The mining industry donated, I don't know the exact figure, but again, in the tens of thousands to campaigns. So these other special interests are out there. They're all playing the same game. But in terms of Ken's comments about we don't know the source of clean election funding. We absolutely know the source. It's the people of Alaska. We're paying them with the $5 contributions and with the public funding of campaigns. So there's no question about where their money's coming from. It's coming from the $5 contributions from voters in their district, and it's coming from the state to say this is the set amount of money for your campaign. So there's no smoke and mirrors involved in any sense of the word. And I'll leave it at that.
Okay,
I'm sorry. I thought of one more response. It is interesting that Mr. Jacobus talks about transparency, which I am a firm believer in. However, he's picking on ballot measure 4, but if we look at the group that he's a part of, which is this so-called anti-corruption initiative, the state of Alaska has no idea, the people of Alaska has no idea who they got their money from, how much money they spent on their initiative, whereas we with the Clean Election Initiative, on our own, we voluntarily have accounted for every dollar that's given to us. It's in the APOC records. We feel that anybody that is talking about changing corruption has to come out front and say, this is where our money's coming from. And we did this from the very beginning. But the people of Alaska, we have no idea where the anti-corruption people got their money or how much. And, you know, we're waiting to this day. And they can, if they want, hide that from here to infinity. But, you know, is it really the right thing to do? We want transparency, too. We're willing to walk the talk.
This is just 1 second. This anti-corruption initiative has nothing to do with this particular clean elections. I'm doing this as a volunteer, as an individual. I'm not being paid for it. The Anti-Corruption Act is going to be on the ballot 2 years from now. And we just filed a Form 990 with the federal government just yesterday.
That's
available for public inspection.
Okay, July?
Yeah, just going back real briefly, Mr. June mentioned all these different high-powered special interest groups, different industries, and that claim that this ballot measure number 3 would help with transparency and awareness. I think that they're not going to go away. They're still going to be here. They're going to find ways that are absolutely not transparent to be involved in our political system. What ways? I'm not certain. But they're not going to disappear.
Okay. Pat, line 9, welcome to the show, and then we'll get to Barb. Go ahead, Pat.
Okay, thank you. If 7 or 8 states have already passed this legislation, have any of those states ever rescinded it because they didn't like the way it worked?
Tim?
Actually, go ahead. I can answer that, too.
Ken Jacobus, go ahead.
There were two. Massachusetts passed it, and then the legislature repealed it. Connecticut enacted it. It was vetoed by the governor, and Connecticut subsequently enacted it again some years later. I just talked to a lady in Connecticut this morning, actually, kind of as a humorous thing. And I told her, you have clean elections in Connecticut. And she says, there's no such thing as a clean election in Connecticut. And she lives there. She's a nurse there.
I know the tribes are also very active there, too. Tim June.
Yeah, if I can respond. It is true. Connecticut was the only state to pass it through legislative action because they had, again, some very extreme corruption, so extreme that legislators had to actually take it upon themselves to pass it. And I should say Connecticut's a very interesting case because in their first year now of clean elections, 95% of the candidates on the right out of the box are running on clean elections. So that speaks to a pretty amazing movement in 1 year. Oh. And in terms of Massachusetts, it's true that the people passed it. The legislature refused to fund it. They went to court. The court said, you will fund this. The legislature refused to fund it. They went back to court, and the court said, sell the furniture in their office to fund it. And that's what they did. They actually sold the furniture of the Speaker of the House right out of his room. And there's a great picture of him sitting on a bare floor with a telephone after the court took the furniture out of his office. So this has to have some teeth. And I should say, part of the discussion in this election cycle, be sure to ask your legislators that if we pass this, will you absolutely guarantee that you'll fund it as an elected representative?
Okay, we're going to move on now to Barb on line 7.
Hi, thank you. I would like to know from Mr. June how well this clean initiative works in other states and what the consensus is from those people, whether they like it or not.
Yeah, thanks, Barb. It's been wildly successful. In Maine, the number of clean election candidates, it started out at 32%. The second election cycle is up to 66%. Now 83% of candidates use the clean election system. One of the things that I found really interesting about it is 91% of the women in Maine who ran as clean election candidates said that they would do it again. And 72% of those said that because of clean elections, it was a very important thing for them even deciding to run for office at all. So what it's done, it's increased the representation of women in the legislature, both in Arizona and Maine. Right now, Maine, I believe, has about 33% of the legislators are women. So not only for women but also for minorities, it's been really successful in empowering people that generally do not have access to special interest money or the big money donors that others do. So again, it's a leveling the playing field, making it a fair system for everyone.
Okay, we're going to move on to John in just a second, but I wanted to quickly
Can we get one quick question?
Just a minute. An email from Robert. He says, 100% of politicians would deny cheating on their wives, so why should we believe what they say about campaign contributions' influence on their behavior? We're not answering that. We're moving on to John on line 6. Welcome to the show.
Hi. This is kind of interesting because I think James Madison addressed the same issue in the Federalist Papers 57 in particular. The reality of it is it's very difficult to select people who are going to be honest and represent the virtue of the people and the needs of the people with complete honesty. In fact, he recommended term limits as the obvious process to eliminate inequities and injustices. But in any case, I think this is interesting because it's kind of fun to see what the people of Alaska will do with this particular issue. So I'm kind of waiting with excitement about the results of this election. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to take one more call, and then we're going to let people wrap up here. JR on line 4, thanks for holding.
Well, I 2 or 3 years ago, this individual came to our house delivering some campaign paraphernalia. He had been in Alaska or 2.5 years, not more than 3 years. And I said, well, you're kind of new here. And he said, well, I know all the issues, so I'm running. And he didn't have any money to go to Fairbanks to continue his campaigning. And you know that Alaska is probably the wealthiest state in the union, and there's a lot of people coming up here of all diverse characters, not all of them of high-quality characters. And I've been here 49 years, and we put term limits on the city council. We put term limits on the school board because there was corruption in both of those organizations, and that has done more good to clean up corruption than any other thing. And for these kind people who did so much great work for this initiative should have included term limits in this initiative. Because that does more good than anything else. I'm voting no on this initiative. Thank you.
Okay, Tim, did you want to respond quickly, and then we'll give Ken a chance?
Yeah, thank you, JR. And I should say I agree with you. There are other effective reforms that are needed, and we debated this early on in drafting the initiative, and we decided to not make it completely comprehensive because our thought is that if we get a fair system into place, those legislators could then make those necessary moves to make this a transparent system, one that is vital, one that's going to move our state along in the proper direction for the next 50 years. And we also had to walk the very narrow line of the requirements of an initiative and not make it multifaceted and violate the one subject rule. So I agree with you. There's other reform that is needed. We will certainly be encouraging you and to work with us in doing that in years to come. But right now, it's clean elections.
Okay, Ken.
Term limits is actually one of my personal issues. I believe strongly in term limits. However, to do it at the state level requires a constitutional amendment. And to do it at the municipal level can be done by initiative, but we're arguing about it in court right now in Kenai on term limits for municipal governments. But I believe strongly in term limits also. But that's not my my closing remark for this, I don't
think. Okay, we're going to go ahead and give July a chance to wrap up, and then I want to get a minute from Ken and Tim real quickly. Go ahead, July.
Sure. Yeah, real quickly, I wanted to say in regards to the gentleman who asked about or lady asked about success in other places, I don't think the number of candidates taking public money should be an indicator of wild success, as Mr. June said. And I think if asking the average person how successful it is, I don't think that from the research that I saw that they were very happy with spending money on different people's campaigns that they weren't supportive of. And there's a few issues that we really didn't get to here. We got on all the main ones, but this commission that it would establish is one that I'm always weary of, you know, even more government, even more more government employees. We already have a huge percentage of government employees here, but this commission and the cost that it's going to incur to the taxpayers, as well as the $12 million per election that's not argued, that's about what we think it's going to cost, is just a huge amount for the small potential gains.
Okay, Ken.
Okay, just a few things. Randolph was right. The state state income tax was subsequently repealed. Ray Metcalf was right. We have these individuals who have these ideas, and they come forward, and the corruption is now being investigated. But this clean elections isn't like that. It's just simply taxpayer-funded elections paid for by government money. It will make the process a lot more difficult. The state will have to hire a lot more employees, spend $12 million for the first election, and who knows what for the second election.
Okay, I'm really sorry, but I have to cut you off in order to give Tim a chance. Tim?
Yeah, and I would encourage voters, ballot measure 3, clean elections, public funding of campaigns. This is our one and only opportunity to take the power back to the people of Alaska, and I encourage you to turn out and vote for it on August 26th.
Okay, and thank you for joining us today for Community Forum. Sorry we didn't get to all the calls, and thanks to my guest today, July Leslie. Thanks for being here. Ken Jacobus and Tim June. I'll see you again next week for Community Forum, and we'll be talking more about elections, and we sure hope that you'll be joining us at KSKA 91.1 or at KSKA.org. We have plenty of information coming up for you next week. I'll see you then.
Thank you, Nellie.
Forum is a production of KSKA's News and Public Affairs Department. If you have questions or comments concerning this program, write to us, KSKA 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska 99508, or email us at communityforum@kska.org. Additional information on today's show topic, including relevant website links, will be posted along with audio of today's program on our website at kska.org/communityforum. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400 during regular business hours. This is KSKA, Anchorage.